Welcome to Getting Credit, a podcast focusing on financial markets, corporate credit, and timely insights from Pacific Funds. Here's your guest host, Peter Farmer, Client Portfolio Manager.
Welcome, and thanks for joining us. Everything we do at Pacific Asset Management is built off of credit, and that starts with the analyst team. Today, we're diving into the housing market and industries tied to that, like the home builder companies. Housing is very personal, so whether it's investors or your neighbors asking about the industry, certainly top of mind today. I'm excited that our guest is Tommy Zhang. Tommy's a credit analyst for Pacific Asset Management, sub-advisor for the Pacific Funds Fixed Income Funds. He's also been with Pacific Asset Management for over 5 years. His research coverage focuses on construction sectors across the capital structure, as well as commodities. Tommy, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me here.
So I'd like to jump right into housing. From your vantage point, what are the most important macro changes over the last year, and what's happening right now?
So I would say it's been a tale of two markets, really. So if you go back to 2021, the housing market was basically on fire, and that was helped by low interest rates. As a result, you saw home prices jump up over 40% since 2019. But starting around April of this year, we had a rapid cool down in the housing market when interest rates shot up by over 300 basis points in a matter of months. So just to kind of give you guys some context here, you had the 30-year fixed rate mortgage start the year around 3%. Today, it's sitting around 7%. And the way we think about it, every 50 basis point increase in that 30-year fixed rate, that increases your monthly mortgage payment by about 6%. So when you think about a 300 to 400 basis point move, it has a huge impact on affordability, especially given home prices have also run up significantly. So this combination of higher rates and higher prices, that has definitely impacted the market. Affordability has recently hit multi-decade lows, with affordability today actually worse than it was in 2006. So Black Knight, they put out a pretty good report on this, but if you look at the data as of September, the national payment to income ratio stood around 37%. And what I mean by that is it takes about 37% of median household income to make the monthly mortgage payment on your average priced home today, assuming a 20% down payment and prevailing mortgage rates. So that is a substantial increase from 2021 when that ratio is in the low 20s. And for comparison, back in 2006, right before the 08 housing crash, that ratio is at 34%. So anytime affordability is worse than the 06, 07 levels, it doesn't make you feel too great. And I think we're starting to see some of the impacts of the housing market now with things slowing down. And that's, you know, ultimately tied back to affordability.
So you laid the foundation there. Thanks for that. And excuse the foundation pun, Tommy, I can't resist. You talked about affordability getting crushed. At the same time, many data points on the health of the consumer continue to be strong. So if we're entering this price discovery environment, what's your view on demand and home price volatility? We're a long way from 2008, no?
That's correct. So demand has certainly come down a good amount, and that's a function of higher rates, right? So higher rates have made housing less affordable for a large portion of the buyer pool out there. As a result, there's a lot of people locked out of the housing market. They're not able to afford as much home as they would like. But what's really interesting to me, at least, is that supply still remains relatively low by historical standards. I think if you asked a lot of the institutional investors, they would have thought that supply would have rebounded much faster than it has. But as of the end of August, we just have about 1.3 million homes available for sale in the existing home market. That represents about 3 months of housing supply. So when you think about it, generally a balanced market, that's usually viewed as 4 to 6 months of supply. So even with the slowdown, supply today is still relatively constrained. And kind of going back to the 2008 housing crisis, I think one of the things that differentiates this down cycle from 2008 is the lack of distressed supply. You know, back in 2008, you had ninja loans, you had people abusing ARMs. Basically, you had a buyer that couldn't afford all the loans they were taking out. So when the market underwent some stress, they became forced sellers in that market. And as a result, you had millions and millions of homes that were foreclosed upon. At one point, the mortgage delinquency rate peaked at around 10%. And people saw that, right? They saw all these homes coming to market. They saw all these forced sellers. And that put a lot of panic in the market because you knew, sitting back in 08, if you waited another couple of months, there'd be more homes out there. This time around, for this down cycle, I just don't see that happening. The underwriting standards were much tighter. If you look at the delinquency rate today for mortgages, that's at a record low of 2.8%. So you have a strong borrower. And on top of that, I think they're very incentivized to stay current on their mortgage payments because they're locked in at attractive low rates of 2.5% to 3%. If they were to be foreclosed upon, they might actually end up paying more in rent if they were actually kicked out of their house.
That's helpful. I heard that stat you shared. So 4 to 6 months has typically been a healthy level of inventory. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. And if you think about 2008, 2009, at one point, that inventory level got up to 10, 11 months of supply. So much, much higher than today, about 3x today's levels.
You reminded me of ninja loans. It's been a long time since I've heard that phrase. So I'm going to switch to the supply side and new construction in a minute. But last on demand, I've received questions from allocators over the past year on institutional buyers. Over the past 2 years, it wasn't just consumers participating in bidding wars. I'm curious, is too much attention paid there, too little? What's the view on the role of institutional buyers and their role in housing?
They have certainly been a growing presence in the new home construction market. So prior to 2020 and 2021, institutional buyers, they were mostly focused on the existing home market. But what we really saw in the last 2 years was that they began buying new homes wholesale. So for a lot of these builders now, they're selling 5 to 10% of all their homes to institutional buyers and another 5 to 10% on top to what you would call mom and pop buyers. So it's entirely possible for 20% of all new homes to be sold to investors instead of traditional retail homeowners. That has definitely altered the market. And I think one of the reasons why home prices went up so quickly in 2021 was because you had this institutional bid that was supporting it. They had a lot of capital deployed. They were looking to deploy that capital and they bid up homes. What's kind of interesting for the down cycle is that a lot of people were expecting that institutional bid to support the housing market as it went down because institutional buyers are cash buyers, right? So they're not really affected by mortgage rates. They're not affected by, you know, rates going up to 7%. But what's been surprising to me is those institutional buyers have actually backed off. So they realize that they can have a better opportunity to buy homes 6 to 12 months down the line. They're choosing to conserve their capital and they're being a bit more cautious this time around. So their presence in the home market, I think, has exacerbated price swings both up and down. It's created a bit more volatility in my mind.
Appreciate that. So let's turn to new home construction, basically the supply side here. We've underbuilt for a decade, and that was in a low rate, lower cost environment. So what's happening now? And expectations longer term for construction?
So I think just to kind of give you guys some background information here, prior to the housing crash of 08, we were building north of 2 million homes a year. When the crash occurred, we dropped all the way down to 500,000 units a year. So there's a 75% decline peak to trough in terms of construction activity. And we never really recovered back to those 2 million levels. You know, even right before COVID, we were building about 1.3 million homes a year. And the industry believes that about 1.5 million homes is what you actually need on an annual basis. So we've been undersupplied for quite a while. And based on who you listen to, that number could be as much as 4 million homes in the market right now. So this time, I think for 2022 and 2023, I don't think you're going to see as much of a drop down just because there's never an excess that formed in the new construction market. Right now, we're at a pace of about 1.6 million homes in terms of construction. A lot of forecasts are calling for a decline to 1.4 million by 2023 and 2024. So it's going to be a pretty modest pullback, you know, call it 10 to 15%. This is going to be nothing like 2008, where you saw a 75% drop in volumes. And for the home builders, that's a good thing, right? Because for the home builders, they're focused on volumes and margins. If your volumes are staying relatively elevated, you're still building above what you're building in 2019, you should be in a good spot. This is not like the great financial crisis where volumes basically imploded overnight.
Sounds like a modest pullback in new home construction of 10 to 15% potentially. Very different scenario in your view from the 75% drop in new construction from the global financial crisis. What other trends are you and the team watching in the coming quarters with home builders in this new rate environment? Are companies already starting to adjust their strategies, Tommy?
So that's a good question, Peter. I think we're starting to see different companies take different approaches when it comes to the slowdown. On one hand, there are certain builders that are prioritizing volumes over margins. And as a result, they're getting a bit more aggressive when it comes to pricing, when it comes to offering more incentives, such as buying down interest rates. Those builders, they want to be production builders. They want to build as many homes as they can, and they're willing to accept a lower margin. And when I say lower margin, that is relative to the peaks of 2021. Most of these builders are still generating margins in excess of where they were in 2019. On the other side of that coin, you have builders that are focused more on margin. So for them, they don't want to be as aggressive when it comes to pricing, and they're willing to sell fewer homes. So it really comes down on a company-to-company basis as to how they plan to navigate this downturn.
Great insight there. So the term supply chain, it was a candidate for word of the year, it seems, last year. We just did a podcast on the Port of Long Beach, so we won't go too far into the topic. But I'm curious where we stand in supply chain normalizing for new home construction. You know, if this discussion was about the auto industry, it would be a conversation about chip shortages and semiconductors. But for housing, how would you sum it up? Has that constraint eased?
Definitely, Peter. Yeah, this was a major constraint in 2021. So back then, there were all sorts of raw material issues, there were labor issues, and those are really key bottlenecks in the home construction process. So when you think about buying a new home, generally you put an order in and it takes about 6 to 9 months for that home to be built. Because of all these shortages when it came to materials and labor, you saw construction times extend by about 2 to 3 months. So it took longer to build the home, and there were a lot of quality issues as well. Those issues have somewhat abated in 2022, just given the pace has slowed down a bit. We're seeing less builders talk about supply chain issues, but they are still prevalent. They're still existing today.
Well, it's good to hear that's eased considerably. Housing is very personal. I'm just curious, as a credit analyst, what makes evaluating the sector interesting or unique to you, particularly for some of the other sectors you follow? For me, it's one of the most tangible sectors. It's not the cloud or cloud computing, for example. You know, we physically see changes in the housing market in our neighborhoods.
Yeah, I think housing is an interesting sector to me because, well, it honestly has a great impact on our personal wealth. A lot of people in the US, they're homeowners. We have a home ownership rate of 65%. So for a lot of folks, the home they own is their greatest asset. And when there are swings in the housing market, it can create a lot of fear and anxiety. Personally, for me, we've been in the market looking for a house over the last 2 years. It's been a tough time to buy because we were outbid so many times. So it pays to stay updated with how the market's doing and keeping a pulse in the market.
We were chatting the other day, Tommy, and you mentioned the Super Bowl is on your calendar, but not for the reason many of us would think. Tell me about housing and the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so usually the spring selling season occurs right after the Super Bowl concludes. So most of the time, homes are sold around the months of March to call it July. That's when there's a lot of houses that come to market because it shows better, given there's better weather. And that's when the bulk of sales occur.
Final question for you. You know, from our discussion, there's quite some uncertainty in housing. Where do you and the team see opportunity currently?
Housing has had a rough year this year, and it's dragged down adjacent sectors such as building products. Everything that's associated with housing has basically become tainted in the credit markets. We do believe that not all of these bonds are created equal. Personally, right now, I see a lot of value in roofing names because when you break down building product demand, some of it's discretionary and some of it's repair-driven and non-discretionary. For us, roofing makes a good story. If your roof has a leak, if there's a storm that blows down your roof, you're probably going to repair it. If your kitchen needs a remodel, you might not be as inclined to do that if there's a recession. So we like names within the roofing sector. We see a lot of good value there. It's been dragged down a bit by the overall housing market, but we think it's going to be pretty resilient over the next couple of years.
Thanks, Tommy. Appreciate your perspective here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Peter.
And that's it for this edition of Getting Credit. Until next time.
The views in this commentary are as of the date recorded and are presented for informational purposes only. These views should not be construed as investment advice, an endorsement of any security mutual fund, sector, or index, or to predict performance of any investment. The opinions expressed herein are subject to change without notice, as market and other conditions warrant. Any performance data quoted represents past performance, which does not guarantee future results. Any forward-looking statements are not guaranteed. All material is compiled from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. All third-party trademarks referenced belong to respective owners. Pacific Funds and Pacific Asset Management, LLC are registered service marks of Pacific Life Insurance Company. Pacific Life Insurance Company is the administrator for Pacific Funds. It is not a fiduciary and therefore does not give advice or make recommendations regarding insurance or investment profit.